Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. So the search for anyone but Romney has gone from Bachman to Perry to Kane to Gingrich to this week's choice, Santorum.
Whether I finish first or second or third, momentum is what it's about. You can add to that momentum here in New Hampshire.
And yet, as the GOP race does shift to New Hampshire, Mitt Romney is still the favorite son and frontrunner.
And the favorite target.
You're calling Mitt Romney a liar.
Well, you seem shocked by it. Yes.
Meanwhile, new revelations this week about Lieutenant Governor Tim Murray's November car crash.
I understand that the vehicle accelerated significantly without braking or turning seconds before the accident, which the state police have said is consistent with what happens when someone falls asleep at the wheel.
And a major victory for legal immigrants from the state's highest court.
A very bold statement by the SJC that legal immigrants are entitled to full equal protection under the Massachusetts Constitution.
And the possible revival of a political dynasty. Joe Kennedy III explores a run for Congress.
And we're going to explore all of that with our Week in Review panel. Kyle Chaney is a reporter for the State House News Service and joins us now. Hi, Kyle.
Hi, good to be here.
Good to have you. And Joan Vinocchi, columnist for the Boston Globe. Hi, Joan. Welcome back.
Hi, nice to be here.
Joan, let's start with you and with the New Hampshire primary. I understand you were up in New Hampshire yesterday taking in some of the candidate events. What's your sense of how this race has shifted since Iowa and the emergence of Rick Santorum as the latest challenger to Romney?
Well, I can't say that the two events that I went to, one for Romney and one for McCain, gives me any more insight than what you said in the lead-in. I mean, Romney seems to be the presumptive nominee. New Hampshire is his to lose. And there's no sign at the moment that he's going to lose it.
Right. You wrote this week that Rick Santorum, though, has a compelling story to tell, tells it pretty well, in contrast to Mitt Romney.
I said on the economic issues he had a compelling story to tell. And that came from basically, you know, watching the speech that he gave after coming in second to Romney by only 8 votes in Iowa. And I think he does have a narrative and sort of a, you know, like a poetry and a passion to the way he tells a story that Mitt Romney lacks. But, you know, as that his first foray into New Hampshire showed yesterday, once, you know, you start peeling that away and sort of getting to his stand on some real hot button social issues like gay rights and abortion rights, it's going to be tougher for him, I think.
Yeah. Kyle, how do you see sort of the next few days shaping up? What's your view of this race overall?
I think, well, especially from down here at the Capitol, you'll see a lot of Massachusetts elected officials, you know, by the busload, probably heading up to New Hampshire. I know this weekend, actually, the Romney campaign arranged for a lot of Governor Romney's former legislative colleagues here to head up there and campaign on his behalf. I think Mass will enjoy a slightly outsized role in that primary, given Romney's standing as the front runner there.
And I understand that Governor Deval Patrick has been weighing in on this race as well. What's his role been?
He is. Well, and he is going to be an important surrogate for President Obama, regardless of who the Republican nominee is. But especially with Romney in the race, he can comment on Romney's tenure as a Massachusetts governor more effectively than anybody on the Democratic side. And he's already been out there linking Romney to the Tea Party and trying to paint him as a real radical Republican.
Romney would probably thank him for that.
That's true.
Well, the latest Suffolk tracking poll has Romney still way up with 40%, followed by Ron Paul, then Rick Santorum, who gained 8 points in the past week. Romney still has his sights set on the next round in President Barack Obama. Here he is talking just today in South Carolina.
We wondered what would happen if we elected a president who had no experience, who'd never worked in the private sector, never led anything, didn't lead in the state legislature, didn't lead in the U.S. Senate. What would happen if we elect someone without experience to the White House? Now we know.
So that was Mitt Romney today in South Carolina, and of course he's going to be back in New Hampshire. Joan, what do you make of his line of attack against President Obama? He accuses him of being a European-style socialist. Yesterday he called him a crony capitalist. What do you make of this?
Well, the crony capitalist line I read came from Michelle Bachman. The European socialist line to me seems a little bit out of whack. But then again, Rick Santorum kind of called Obama a fascist. So I don't know. It seems to be part of the whole Republican talking points thing right now. They're going to have a harder time making that case that he doesn't know what he's doing if the economy starts to recover, as it seems to be doing, if the jobless numbers go down, as the latest report shows. You know, I think for Romney and for all these candidates, the debates over the weekend in New Hampshire are going to be really, really key and really, really important. And they give Newt Gingrich an opportunity to do what he did best before he got slammed by all that negative advertising, to sort of make his own case. So I'm looking forward to watching those over the weekend.
Debates are going to be interesting. Joan, you mentioned Newt Gingrich. He learned in Iowa that negative campaigning works. An onslaught of attack ads, and a big part of them from that super PAC that supports Mitt Romney, really killed him in the polls. He's now going after Romney in a big way. At the top, we heard him call Romney a liar. Here he is Wednesday in Concord going after Governor Romney.
Governor Romney is a moderate Massachusetts Republican to the left of the vast majority of Republicans. I find it amazing the news media continues to say he's the most electable Republican when he can't even break out in his own party. And I don't think he's going to. I mean, he'll do fairly well here. This is one of his three best states. But the fact is that Governor Romney, in the end, has a very limited appeal in a conservative party.
Kyle, I'm curious, as someone who covers Massachusetts politics, what do you make of the fact that the worst thing someone can say in this race is, you're from Massachusetts?
Gingrich has made sure to say that repeatedly. I think his spokesman just this week described it as the last bastion of the Soviet Empire in Massachusetts. And Gingrich also implored Republicans not to allow America to become like Massachusetts. I think it's just, the state's got a reputation, and it has for a long time. And Romney was able to get elected here, which to some in the Republican Party, I think, would take that as a sign that he may not be the true conservative he claims to be.
Yeah, interesting. Joan, will Newt Gingrich have an effect on Romney? Can he? I mean, it's hard to imagine that he can get his own campaign back up and running in a serious way. But he's a tough debater. There are two debates. He's going to have a lot of opportunities to go after Romney.
As I said, I mean, I think the debates offer him the most opportunity. But as the rise and fall of all the Republicans that you outlined earlier show, it's really hard to turn the mud into gold, back into the gold that was, the original, sort of Gingrich story. I think he has a tough time. And he, watching him up in New Hampshire yesterday, he's kind of dour, not really very optimistic in his presentation. And I just don't know how that sells. As far as calling Romney, a moderate Massachusetts Republican, well, the people of New Hampshire know Romney pretty well. And so far, that label hasn't been hurting him in the polls.
Joan and Kyle, it's Meghna here. And on behalf of some listeners, I've got to ask, when people say they don't want the rest of America to turn into Massachusetts, I wonder, why not?
Well, it's good. I mean, you talk to any of the Democratic leaders here. I think Speaker DeLeo just published an op-ed in the New York Daily News touting why Massachusetts is the place to be right now, with some metrics, economic metrics, way outpacing the nation. So, yeah, you raise a valid point.
Well, at least in terms of unemployment, absolutely. But maybe not in terms of what our lieutenant governor has done recently, because you've all seen the pictures of the car after he crashed it. Let's take a little bit of a step back here. The state police released details about an early morning car crash that Lieutenant Governor Tim Murray was involved in back in November. Really scary details, actually. But here's a little bit of tape we've got from Tim Murray himself.
Given the seriousness of the accident, I feel lucky to be alive, and I'm grateful that no one was injured.
It seems like kind of an understatement. The car, according to the pictures that we've all seen, was completely totaled. I mean, Joan, it was astounding that he walked away uninjured, right?
Well, it is, that is true. I mean, how he walked away seems miraculous. How he's handled it has been a complete disaster.
Because initially he said he hit some black ice, was wearing a seatbelt, was observing the speed limit. Turns out none of those things are true.
None of those things are true. And we still don't know the whole story behind the story. And, if I were, Tim Murray, other people have said this, I would just stop the drip, drip, drip and just put it all out there. So it's over.
Kyle, apparently Tim Murray struck a rock ledge at 92 at least miles an hour. What are people on Beacon Hill saying? I know that Governor Patrick wants to move away from this topic as fast as he can.
I think anyone in the administration wants to turn the page on that, and they repeat every time they address it, they say, and we want to get back to work now, and they hope that people stop asking questions, but they haven't. And, you know, to Joan's point, it's pretty astonishing that every fundamental detail of what happened, that as Lieutenant Governor recalled it initially, was incorrect according to the black box data that they reviewed. So I think that's why the questions are persisting. And it may be true that the Lieutenant Governor has divulged everything he knew as he knew it, but the fact that they were so starkly different and it was such a traumatic accident was a lot for people to swallow.
Now some are calling for him to release cell phone records of calls he may have made during the time of the accident. Do you think that will be forthcoming?
I mean, it's hard to say. I think it depends on how badly they want this story to go away. Or to get resolved, and I think, you know, they may not want to set a precedent of every time there's some question about where someone was at an exact moment they've released cell phone records. So it depends on whether that's a road they want to go down.
Joan, what would you suggest that the administration do right now to manage the situation?
Well, I think that he should put forth the cell phone records. And, you know, if Tim Murray really thinks he has a political future and really thinks that he's going to be running for governor of Massachusetts, I think he has to be really much more forthright than he has been and just come forward. And I'm disappointed in Governor Patrick. I think he should be, if he's not telling, you know, the lieutenant governor to do that, he should be. And, there should be more transparency than they've come forward with so far.
Mm. Well, one more story, this one from the judicial branch, and it's, of course, the SJC Supreme Judicial Court ruling this week that legal immigrants in the state of Massachusetts should be allowed to participate in the state's subsidized health insurance plan. Joan, your response to the SJC's ruling?
Well, my response would be sort of an answer to that question you raised before, like what's wrong with Massachusetts, or why do people, you know, sometimes put us in a different category? I don't know that you'd get a court order like this or a ruling like this in other states. It does make us different. It's going to cost the state a lot of money. The administration has said they're going to comply with it because they respect the court, and things like that do set us apart, I think, in a good way.
In a good way. Kyle, what's your take on this ruling?
Well, you know, and it's important to remember the context, which is that lawmakers a couple of years ago decided they were going to cut these primarily low-income, relatively recent immigrants off of the rolls of a very heavily subsidized health care program, actually one of the cornerstone programs of the state's health care law that Governor Romney signed in 2006. And they're going to put them on a much reduced version of that plan. And the court said, you know, that's a violation of their equal protection. And so regardless of the fiscal implications, and there are going to be significant ones, we can't uphold anything that violates constitutional rights.
Just to be clear, this is regarding legal immigrants
legal
only.
Immigrants who have been in the country for fewer than 5 years.
And cutting them out was supposed to save $150 million. Now the state has to find that money.
It was supposed to save about $120 at the time. They've actually estimated the costs have risen so much since then that it would cost more than $150 million to bring them back on.
One more political story, this one about Massachusetts. We learned that Joseph P. Kennedy III is considering a run for Congress for the seat currently held by Barney Frank, who's retiring after this term. Joe Kennedy is the son of former Congressman Joe Kennedy, the grandson of former Senator Robert Kennedy. Certainly a lot of name recognition. Kyle, what do you make of this possibility? I mean, it looks like he's resigned from his job in the district attorney's office in Middlesex County. He's making a run for it. What do you think?
Anytime you get a Kennedy in any race, it's going to generate a lot of chatter, a lot of buzz. I think that's going to be a very crowded field in the look of it. I don't know. There's some questions about whether a Kennedy would be a field clearing type of candidate, especially one is young, sort of young and relatively unknown compared to some of his more better-known relatives.
31 years old, Stanford University, Harvard Law School, Peace Corps graduate. What do you think, Joan? I mean, obviously the name recognition is a big issue. It helps him more than it hurts him, right?
Well, there's name recognition for the over 50 crowd. I'm not sure how it translates to younger voters.
Uh-huh.
Listen, based on the resume you just read, I mean, he seems like a good candidate, you know, to run for Congress in a crowded field with all the attention that a Kennedy gets. On paper, it seems like he would have a good chance of prevailing. politics, you never know the twists and turns of politics, however, and I'm just not sure that Camelot lives as strongly as it used to in the memories of Massachusetts voters.
Scott Brown might be the embodiment of that.
Yeah, it's true, and the district is much changed, so much changed, in fact, that's part of the reason that Barney Frank has retired. So that could be an issue as well. It might not be a sure, you know, the surest bet in the world for him.
Yeah. I also thought that his answer to a Boston Herald reporter when he said when they called to get reaction and he said something along the lines of "Dude, I've got my job to do," it was kind of interesting.
Dude. Well, on that note, dudes, why don't we go to our weekly hubbubs? And those are the stories that didn't make it above the fold, but are worth a mention. Kyle, your hubbub.
Well, I actually alluded to it earlier, but right on New Year's Day, Speaker DeLeo distributed an op-ed that he had published in the New York Daily News, which was a surprising venue for a lot of Massachusetts reporters to wake up to tout Massachusetts' economic success and ability to weather some of the economic turmoil of the last couple of years better than the rest of the country. And he described it as a pitch for why Massachusetts is the place to be, but it was an interesting placement in a New York metropolitan newspaper.
Interesting. And also, yeah, local metropolitan one, not the national one in terms of the New York Times.
Exactly. Yeah. I think he had a certain target audience in mind I don't know how the reception was down there, but
Joe and Nick, why didn't you put it in the Globe, I wonder?
Either that or everyone else turned him down is what I'm
right, that's a good question.
Joan, your hubbub?
Well, in today's Globe on the business page is an item about Natalie Jacobson, who was a quite famous Boston TV anchor, considered the Madonna of news, I think they used to call her at Channel 5, coming back to help launch an internet news service in Worcester. And I think that's, in the world of tweets and blogs and social media, I think it's a good thing for journalism that a personal brand like Natalie Jacobson's still resonates and sells, and it also speaks well to the power of reinvention.
That's great. That's an interesting story. Of course, Natalie Jacobson, she defined TV news in this city for a long, long time. So talk about reinventing yourself. That's sort of exciting. Meghna, you have a hubbub.
I do. And it actually, if I could, I'll say it. I'm cheating because it actually happened at the end of last week. But it involves this person. And let's hear from her ourselves.
What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Stand a little taller.
Okay, so Joan, pop quiz, who is that?
Oh, I was afraid you were going to say that. I'm sorry. Yes, Kyle, he'll
Come
know.
Come on.
You got to ask my 14-year-old daughter, she'll tell you.
Kyle?
I'm just curious to see where you're going with this, Magna.
It's Kelly Clarkson, of course.
Oh, Ron
who,
Paul.
Who
okay.
Thursday, last week, endorsed Ron Paul through a tweet, right? She says, I love Ron Paul. I liked him a lot during the last election. No one gave him a chance, which was huge news running up to the Iowa caucuses this week. Apparently, Ron Paul's supporters claim that they boosted the sales of her new record by 600%. But then the truth turns out that no. Sales actually dropped. And why? I think Kelly Clarkson's own tweet in response to her plummeting sales tells you why. She tweets this week, I'm really sorry if I've offended anyone. Obviously, that was not my intent. I do not support racism. I support gay rights, straight rights, women's rights, men's rights, white, black, purple, orange rights. That was more than 140 characters, so I don't know how she got it all in there.
She must have done multiple tweets.
But all in all, Kelly Clarkson, Ron Paul, it seems to fit, because I feel like the presidential primaries are at times can feel a lot like American Idol anyway.
Meghna, thanks for that.
I'm sure you mean it.
thanks for letting us end this segment on such a high note. Kyle Chaney, reporter for the State House News Service, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Glad to be here.
And Joan Vanocki, columnist for the Boston Globe. Thanks, Joan. Have a great weekend.
You too. Thank you.
Up next, former priest and Boston Globe columnist James Carroll on the 10-year anniversary of the Catholic sex abuse scandal. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.